This is The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Normally heard Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. right here in the center of your dial. But today, a two-hour special. Two-hour special, we're at the end of our fund drive, the fund drive that we've been going on for the last month, Save WBAI. And today I'm going to be presenting to you a remarkable, remarkable presentation about sexuality, about the evolution of sexuality, about where it began. And this comes from the work that I did years ago with Roberta Maria Atti. When she and I were presenting programs together, she was brilliant, and we had a wonderful thing that we did together on these programs. We worked on the men's series together, which many of you have heard. The history of sex was probably my second best. Now, this is an interesting thing because today we're presenting it to you in an unusual way, and we're going to make you an unusual offer. But let me get started by giving you a taste of what we're talking about. Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti. So far, we talked about the G-spot. Now we're going to talk about three theories of evolutionary biologists and sexologists and anthropologists as to why the human female seems to experience a more pleasurable orgasm than any other species.
They're called the pole theory?
These are the pole X theory, the upsuck theory, and the cuddle theory. And this is always according to the book by Dr. Schlein, Sex, Time and Power, How Women's Sexuality Shaped Human Evolution. So let's start with the pole X theory, Armand. This one starts with having to explain that human anatomy presents a problem for conception. In most mammals, or in most higher species, or in every other species, actually, the woman's reproductive organs are located in the body in such a way that the birth canal or the conception vessel is parallel to the ground, meaning it's horizontal, meaning that when a seed is deposited into it, the conception vessel holds it like a cradle. But in the woman, in the human, and it's the only species that has this problem, in the human, the vagina has moved from the back of the pelvis to the front, and now it is located vertical, so it is perpendicular to the ground, so that when the seed, when the sperm is deposited in there, in the conception vessel, we have a problem that it falls out.
Let me simplify this a little. Because women walk on two legs as opposed to four legs, they are not, the birth canal is actually different. It's not parallel to the ground. So therefore, since if someone has sex with an animal that has four legs, the animal is walking around and the seed is kind of hanging in there. You know, it's not going anywhere. But the trouble is that since women tend to stand up and walk around like men do, and they walk around standing, it tends to fall out. It drops out. It doesn't move towards fertilizing the egg. So one theory about orgasm is that the reason that the women were given an orgasm on the completion of sex or during sex,
So pleasurable. That's the most important part of it. That the reason why the orgasm in a female is experienced so deeply by the woman
is because it knocks her out.
Right. If you see a pair of dogs mating or a pair of horses, any kind of animal, you see that right after mating, the female just walks away. Lions and the lioness, tigers, the mating ends, and the female moves away. She goes to eat or take care of other cubs, whatever. Now, and in those species, which are the higher species of mammals, where already the female shows some kind of pleasure associated with sex, but not nearly as much as humans, in those species, if a woman behaved like that, meaning if the woman had no pleasure in sex and she just walked away from it, most likely conception would be very difficult. But if you knock her on the head with the pole axe, with the hammer of orgasm, meaning that she's flooded with neurotransmitters that make her relaxed and make her
knocked out.
Then
knocked
she's
out.
Gonna
she tends to want to go to sleep.
Stay at least for a few minutes, lying down, and that facilitates conception.
So it's really a process of fertilization by giving a woman an orgasm as part of her mating behavior. It is possible that if she has an orgasm during sex, she will want to remain not standing up. It's called the pole axe theory because it's like getting hit in the back of the head with a handle. And that was where the theory came from. I'm sure it was a male
Well,
theory.
Because otherwise, if the woman just walks away, chances are that the sperm will leak out and conception would be much
It just
difficult.
Sounds like, you know, the kind of a theory that was named by a man.
Sure, yes. The naming of it, I was kind of surprised, actually. But all three names are a bit, you know, they're not my favorite names. I wouldn't call these theories with these names, but
you know what I think, Roberta? I think when men were doing research, men were doing research on women, and male gynecologists very often are angry, and their anger bleeds through.
Yeah.
It kind of comes through in the way they talk in their descriptions. Because now let's take the next theory, which is called the suckle up.
Upsuck.
The upsuck.
Yes,
theory.
Actually, I saw a film of this. I saw a video where this had been put onto a film. So this theory says, now we're going to get into the physiology of intercourse. Penetration will cause the vagina to stretch, and will move the location of the cervix of the woman, so that the cervix is no longer at the bottom of the vagina, but it moves kind of slightly up to the front. The woman is lying down. The sperm is deposited deep into the vagina, and because of the stretching that occurs, let's say that there is a pocket that forms at the end of the vagina, and the pocket becomes like a kind of like a little valley, a pool in there, so that the sperm that is deposited into the vagina really forms a pool in the pocket that has formed caused by the stretching. But also remember now that the cervix has moved practically directly above this pool. Okay, and I'm trying to give a description.
It's not working, I promise.
Well, I'm trying because, of course, through the radio.
But nobody sees your hands.
Okay, well.
Anyway, let's just assume that the contractions cause a sucking motion that draws the sperm upward to the cervix.
The cervix, actually, if you see the film, the cervix dips into the pool of sperm as the woman experiences the contractions of orgasm. And this is why they call it the upsuck theory, because the cervix is seen picking up sperm.
Armand DeMille here with you. If you're just passing by and wondering what's going on radio, and you tuned into the beautiful voice of Roberta Atti, you will hear us talking about vaginas and sex and orgasm and sperm and stuff like that, because we're exploring some of the origins of mating behaviors. And this is part two in a series as we're talking about it. So one is the pole axe theory. The other is the upsuck theory of orgasm. Why do women have orgasms? This is a question. Why was that built into nature since no other animal seems to have them? I mean, no other animal seems to be going through them, right?
No, other animal seems to have the intensity of the pleasure that a woman experiences. But no other animal dies as much as women die in childbirth. So we also need to say that women are the only species that, A, by the time she's done with her fertile years, she loses approximately 4 to 5 gallons of blood. Between menses and childbirth losses and all of the blood that's lost through reproductive activity, gallons, Armand, 4 to 5 gallons are lost. So already there's a tremendous demand on the body of the woman just from the blood loss itself. But then if you look at mortality among young women, childbirth is one of the has historically been one of the highest causes of early death. So it would make sense that nature would make it at least a pleasurable activity, right? And what we're describing are the theories that anthropologists and sexologists have come up with to explain why orgasm in females.
Humans. You know, a little later we also want to talk about some of the difference between, some of the strangest things, like the most fertile years for a woman is when she's in her 30s, and the most fertile time for a young man is when he's in his early 20s or late teens, and it would seem like the way nature designed it, it should be women should be with teenage men. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's the design. We're going to talk about why it seems not to be true. Why is it true that men seem to be attracted to younger women and women are attracted to older men? That's also going to be a part of what we're doing. But before we do, Roberta, let's go to that third theory. We've talked about the Pollack theory of why orgasm exists. And then we talked about the Upsuck theory, and it may be both, mind you, because both could be going on. You could be poleaxed and upsucked at the same time.
Oh, Armand.
No, I don't mean that in a derogatory way.
I know.
It does sound terrible.
It sounded terrible.
I know. I'm sorry. So what's the third theory?
The cuddle theory.
This sounds nice, huh?
It's better than the others, yes. But actually, in order to get into the cuddle theory, we need to talk about precisely what you just mentioned, which is the orgasmic capacity is not matched between the two genders, time-wise. And now this goes into
the cuddle theory without doing that?
No, because it's part of it.
Oh, boy, because, you know, there's just a matter of timing. I'll tell you what.
But there's quite a long
explanation. We're going to have to hold that. Yes, there is.
Yeah.
Why the cuddle and why the differences in the sexuality? And we're going to have to hold that. Because we have some things to do. Many years ago, Roberta Atti and I worked together at putting a few things together. The second best thing we ever did was called Human Sexuality, The History of Human Sexuality. This is an amazing set of programs. And, I mean, it starts off with the evolutionary conundrum, which you've heard a little bit about. The evolutionary conundrum was very simple, and I'm going to describe it to you. It goes this way. There was women who were adolescent, who were developing, and they were developing these humans were coming through these women, and they were teenage women, and they had pelvises that were too small for the larger human head that was coming through. So it became evident that if a young adolescent became pregnant, the human head would get stuck coming through the pelvis, and the mother would die, and the infant would die. Evolutionary conundrum, right? So evolution said, hey, that's no good, because the humans are going to die. So what women learned to do was to not get pregnant when they were too young. How did they learn to do that? How is a woman going to not get pregnant when she's a teenager, when she goes through estrus the first time, when she says as soon as she's ready, she announces it, a male smells it, and he jumps on her bones. But if he makes her pregnant, he's going to kill the human race. Women learn to do something that they've done ever since. They learn to hide their interest. So what women had to do, what females had to do, was to cover up that they were in estrus, because they had to hide it. They had to put it away so that not every male would jump on their bones. So now, since the women... humans could no longer tell, you couldn't tell as a male human, is that woman ready or not? Because they were hiding it. So now as a male, you ought to always guess. Is she ready? Is she not? Just like males guess nowadays. Just the way it wound up being today, where men are trying to guess, will she be my bed partner? Will she not be my bed partner? Because the signals are not so straight. If you're a dog or a cat, it's very simple. She's ready, we're going. The evolutionary conundrum was that the human race would have died had not women learned to deceive men. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. They saved our lives. This is just part of what we learn as we go over 1 million years of human development. First life on the planet, the Earth, you know, 4.5 billion years old. First life appeared 3.5 billion years ago. Primates, 60 million. Monkeys, 36 million. Our direct descendants, maybe 14 million, at least a million years ago, you know? So we call this the million years of sex flesh drive. Now, it's just the beginning. The story is so good. It's so entertaining. And I want you to know that it is at a time when Roberta Atti and I were at our peak of presentation. The two of us were really humming along at this time, and we were doing wonderful work together. We no longer work together, but we did it this time, and she's in Italy, and I asked her permission to reoffer these, and she was so proud that we could do it. So you're going to hear wonderful Roberta Atti, and you're going to hear me, and Roberta Atti, who you're also going to hear, is an amazing person, because when I first met her, she stuttered, and she decided to challenge that stutter. And she became a radio broadcaster. It's amazing to hear her. You'll hear her lapse into it every now and then. The work with Roberta Atti is precious. We did the men's series together. We're doing this History of Human Sexuality series on this flash drive. Now, if you don't think you could use a flash drive, you can. If you have a computer, you could use a flash drive. You plug this in. It's not like you plug it in and you have to be on the internet. You plug it in and all the information, it's like an external drive. It's right there, right in front of you. And we're going to juice it up.
So a flash drive is a storage unit, a digital storage unit for audio, photo, video, any kind of media you can desire. And it has, it's tiny. It's the size of a key. And you put it right in your computer, and you can play whatever's on there directly through your computer.
So we found these flash drives that were given to WBAI. They're imprinted. WBAI. It's beautiful in black. And it's a 4 gig. What does that mean, 4 gigs?
4 gigs mean we can fit a lot on there.
Okay. We're going to put on this.
On highest quality.
We're going to put on this 12, at least 12 programs. And let me tell you the 12 programs I've chosen. We're going to give you not only the 10 programs, which include the following things. The evolutionary conundrum, the first thing I spoke about. The second thing, the need for orgasm. Why did orgasm come into the picture? I mean, pardon the expression. Why orgasm? Who needs that? For what reason? Does it bring the sperm further closer to the egg? Is that what's necessary? Is it necessary for pleasure? Did you know that there's a particular G-spot in every woman that when a baby is being born, it passes this G-spot and produces a form of orgasm so that the mother bonds with the baby and has, in effect, an orgasm as the baby is being born? Tricky, tricky, this human body, isn't it? Then third is mating and parenting. Why? Why certain mates? What kind of parenting? And then comes this idea of nurturance. You know, there are certain animals in the world where there's no nurturance at all. Baby's born, that's it, kid. You know, you're a froggy, go run out into the water. Or you're, you know, a snail, you got to go do it. Turtles, little turtles, just running off to sea. You've had enough of a good mother. But the need for nurturance, where it comes about in human sexuality. And then the whole idea of fertility and conception, the need for communication. Whoever said you had to talk to somebody? Why? Well, we cover that. We cover how that became part of the human communication and the human being. And then comes this idea of romantic love and attraction. On another program, we talk about the evolution of development of human love and attraction. What attracts you to somebody else? And you'll be surprised how many factors there are related to attraction. For example, pheromones. Smell alone. Do you know that you can be more related, you can be more attracted to someone's smell very often than the sight of them? Why? Why do certain smells? We know about sight. We know if somebody looks like they're healthy, it's going to say, some part of you is going to say they're going to make good babies. But there is a genetic thing that takes place. If you have a genetic selectivity, if you have, for example, certain genes, you want somebody who's got genes that carry different resistances to disasters in nature, antibodies that are yours. You want to be different. You don't want somebody with the very same genetics as yours, because that leads to all kinds of weird things, as we know about brothers and sisters when they're mating, like in the royal family and stuff like that. We don't want that. What we want is we want somebody who has a significant difference so that their resistance can meet your resistance and the two of you can develop a different resistance. You become stronger. So the need to attraction very often is being attracted to the opposite. And they say opposites attract, and they say it for a good reason. And then comes the revenge of the right brain. I'm going to hold off on that one and tell you about that one later. And the difference between humans and animals, are we all animals? Is this all basically animal stuff? Is that all love is about? Enough people write about the chemicals? Are we just having a chemical reaction? And then through all of this, what is the next step for humankind? All of this gets covered in one of the most entertaining possible series of programs that I think you will enjoy a great deal. Telephone number, 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Go to your phones right now, my friends, for a $200 donation. Yes, it's $200, but we're putting a lot of work into this. We're reaching into the vault. 212-757-4488. You will get entertainment that I promise you is very rewarding. 212-757-4488. In addition to the 10 programs on the history of human sexuality, which is going to be called the Positive Mind Sex Flash Drive, we're going to include two other interviews that I did. One is an interview that I did with Elizabeth Eves called Bear. Elizabeth is a stripper, and she was a stripper who wrote a book called Bear, and she talked about how men were attracted to her and what they would do and what they would do when they would go to clubs. She called it The Naked Truth About Stripping. 212-757-4488. Limited number of these drives available, by the way, but for the first, I think, 35 people who call, you'll get them. $200 donation, 212-757-4488. Bear, I've reworked this program a number of times with Julian, and we've put it on, and we got ready. We were going to present it on air, and I said, I'm just not comfortable presenting it on air. It's just a little bit on the side of I want people to elect it. I don't want people to be just tuning in and hear this. This is about human sexuality, and you begin hearing things on this program that they'll surprise you. They will absolutely surprise you from a woman who did this for a living. In addition to that one, we're also going to present Bonk with Mary Roach, which is about the science of sex, and she talks about the physical science of sex and how science and sex match together. So you've got a total of 12 programs. Bear is remarkable. Bonk is fascinating. And the 10 programs, 212-757-4488. As if that's not enough, since we're reaching into the vault, since it is the last part of the fund drive, and this, you were offering a flash drive only. Flash drive. I mean, I'm sure if you call us, you can convince us in some way or other to do it otherwise, but the flash drive is the primary thing we want to be offering. 212-757-4488. The flash drive includes that plus music. Yes, music. I will throw onto this flash drive another section which will include music. You will see and hear about music. This is Armand DeMille with you. You'll see some of my favorite music. I'll throw it on there for you, stuff that you haven't heard before. 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. So you get music. You get history, you get Roberta Atti, you get listening to some very interesting people talk about sex, and you get me. 212-757-4488. Our last time, we'll be here for 2 hours today, our last time that we will be asking you during this fund drive. There is one additional premium that we're offering, of course. And since it's the last time we're offering, and so many of you have taken advantage of it, for an equal amount of money, $200. So now you can either get sex or me. Now you can get me. You can get the history of sex, and you could listen to those beautiful flash drives and keep it, and then you could send it on to other people. What a wonderful little gift it is. 212-757-4488. But what I do have available to you is if you want to, you could have a one-time meeting with me personally. And I've done so many people. I've met so many people too. Over the last 3 weeks, because I've had spare time. 212-757-4488. You make a donation to WBAI, and I will meet with you personally. I'll sit down with you in my office and we'll have a discussion about anything you want to talk about. It would be my honor and my pleasure. 212-757-4488. There are two premiums that we are offering. These are the two. The Flash Drive, the Positive Mind Sex Flash Drive, which includes the history of human sexuality, 10 CDs with Roberta Atti and Armand DeMille, including Bear, which will be another program, and Bonk with Mary Roach. 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. You can get the, if you go to your phone for your last time, we're just trying to raise this money for the station. We have people standing by, beautiful people, just standing by ready to take your calls.
That's 212-757-4488.
Hey, listen, Roberta, let's go right to it. The third theory. The cuddle theory of why women have orgasms. Right?
That's the one that's going to take
the longest.
I
mean, we know why men have sporgasms.
Sport orgasms.
Right, to drive them, right? It makes sex more fun, makes it more frequent, but, I mean, that's the male thing he's going to drive to do. And the orgasm itself pushes the sperm along. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And
well,
we're going to talk more about that.
Anatomically, yes. You're
we're
talking
going to talk
about
more about that. We need to talk more about that. And I think it's going to maybe take another program. But go ahead. Talk about this cuddle down theory.
Well, what we said a few minutes ago was that there's a mismatch between the ages at which a woman and a man are orgasmically more active or competent, I should say. A man is more likely to be the most capable of reaching repeated orgasms in the early teens. So let's say between 13 and 18. A woman is more likely to reach orgasm or even repeated orgasms in her 30s. So it would make sense that the match, the ideal match, should be between a teenager, male, and a woman in her 30s, whereas we know that it's quite the contrary. When we think of couples, usually we think of the male being the older one and the female being the younger one, and most men like younger women, and most women like older males. Of course, I don't want to stereotype, but just generally, if you ask most people, this is what they would say. And this is the image that we're used to. And this has to do, again, with how society, how human society, how human behavior, how human, the cultural stratus has developed through sexuality has shaped the whole of human culture and social structure. So that was a convoluted sentence, but I'm going to get right to it. The cuddle theory. So it takes a lot longer for a woman to reach orgasm than it does for men, usually. The older the woman is, the shorter the time seems. The older the woman is, the more likely she is to get there. The older the woman is, the easier it is for her to experience it, and to experience it when she decides to, meaning that it's within her control, either through intercourse or through masturbation. A male the younger he is, the more likely he is to ejaculate prematurely, meaning that his difficulty is with withholding the ejaculation, not with arriving at it. So what we have here is, in a man's fantasy, the ideal sex, the sex that he considers the easiest, the most desirable, is one where he meets a woman he does not know. He has sex with her without any kind of commitment, without any kind of promise, without any kind of emotional involvement. He just penetrates her and mates with her. And then the two separate and never meet one another again. Now, this is a fantasy, and I'm not stereotypifying human males in the sense that I'm saying they don't care, but I'm saying in the fantasy of a male, sex is very simple. It's a simple activity in which he mates with a female, and that's it. That's all that's required. And that's just because physiologically, his nervous system, his brain, is wired that way, is wired to have sex with as many females as possible so that his seed can spread far and wide, always in the interest of survival of the species, always in the interest of the best odds for reproduction, so that this is how he's wired. He has no fault at this. It's not by his choice that this is how he's wired.
He builds up a lot of sperm, and he feels the need to relieve it frequently. If he's a young teenage guy, he's masturbating, and he's getting rid of this, and he's dumping it all the time.
The younger he is, the more he wants to mate. But for him, mating is just mating. There is no desire for long-term commitment.
For most teenage
concern,
boys,
there's no concern for how she feels about it. And I'm not saying this in a bad way, mind you. Right. I'm talking about the perspective of the nervous system. How
and the
wired.
Way nature built it. He is wired to have the most sperm that are viable at a certain age, at a certain time, and he's got to get that around as much as possible. And they have shown that he has a more potent sperm, or more, whatever that is called, when he doesn't know, when it's a female that he's unfamiliar with.
That makes sense also. But you see, when you think of the way that nature designed this, nature designed it with the best interest of the species in mind. The best interest of the species says, primitive people, the more he mates, the more offsprings there will be, the younger he is, the healthier he is, the stronger he is, the more females he can impregnate. The younger his sperm is, the healthier it is, the stronger the offsprings are going to be. So in that sense, it makes perfect sense, Armand, that the male should be wired that way.
But okay, now so let's make sure we get to what we're female. Talking about, which is the woman's
orgasm. The side of the female says, okay, here is a male who is wired that way. But what is my share in this? What is my responsibility in this? Well, what I know about myself and about my reproductive structure is that once I get pregnant, I am going to most likely become dependent on someone, something, some form of support that is going to feed me, feed my baby, allow me to be there for my baby so that I can feed the baby. I am most likely going to be in need of support structurally through society or through a mate. So what I need is to find a mate that is going to give me that support, because if I'm going to have his child, I have to make sure that he's not going to just going to mate and run off.
Which is what the tendency is
of
to
males
do.
Is. So
because
what
the male
does
is
choose?
Built to mate and just go off and mate again and go off, and since variation is stimulating, he's going to go from one to another, not to the same one over and over again.
Yes, because the same can only conceive one child every 5-6 years.
So by nature, he's going to just go bopping around.
And
you know?
That makes sense behaviorally. It makes sense for him. But she has to mind that, because if she chose that hypersexual teenager, ready to mate with every woman in sight, but not interested in a long-term commitment, she would most likely be abandoned because, you know, this is a young male who is not ready to take on the responsibility of a family. So what
when you hear stories about the woman who is the married woman at home who is making love with the 17-year-old pool attendant, she wants just teenage boy who's going to come in and go away.
Yes, that's an adventure for her as it is for
him. It's adventure, not just work. You're matching the 30-year-old with the 17-year-old.
But that's not for reproduction.
But it's usually not the preference.
And it's not for reproduction. That's just for fun, right? It's not. You're not going to start a family. If you're a 35-year-old woman and you mate with a 19-year-old young man because of the fun of it, you're not thinking of starting a family with this man, most likely. You're just thinking of having some fun. But if you want to start a family, and for a woman, there's always that question mark, am I going to get pregnant? And so much of her life is invested in this that she's going to have to be very discerning as to who she looks for. So she's going to look for a male who shows that he cares enough about her, he loves her enough, he is concerned and committed, and he wants to stay with her and protect her and take care of her enough that, especially when they mate, he's going to care more about her pleasure than his own. So he's going to be able to delay his own or to really even eliminate it. It's not important for him as much as it is for her to enjoy sex. If she sees that this is how her mate is during sex, she can possibly hope that this is a mate that will not abandon her, that will not run off and go mate with another 100 women, will not impregnate her and leave, and will stay for the long haul, which means will provide the meat, will provide the shelter, will provide the protection and all of that she needs when she's going to have that baby.
So a male who is older is attractive to a female, I hate to use female, a woman who is younger, right? Because maybe she's in her 30s and 40s, she'll like the older man because he takes longer to have an orgasm. And
basically,
because he takes longer to have an orgasm, it is interpreted by her body as somebody who cares about her pleasure.
Right.
So men who are...
That if she should get pregnant by this man, he's more likely to be a caring father also.
And he's likely to take care of her.
Right, and of the child.
And even if she doesn't, you know, even if she doesn't get pregnant, he's likely to take care of her.
More so than a young male who's all over the place.
Who's going to be all over the place and have many impulses. So in the cuddle theory...
In the cuddle theory, it's that...
Of why women have orgasms.
Yes, but also why it takes so long for a woman to have it versus the male, you see? Because in the cuddle theory, what's also noticed is that there's a mismatch in the timing. A woman, it takes her much longer to achieve orgasm than it does for a male. But if the male is willing to postpone his own in order to wait for her and make sure she's satisfied, then she's more likely to have found a mate that is going to be a good mate and a good father. So nature gave woman orgasm because the pleasure of sex, it makes the risk of death almost worth it. But also, it made her orgasm more difficult to achieve because it requires, on the part of the male, more of the patience that he's going to show, that is going to tell her that he's a good mate. You see?
Wow. It's great. I mean, it's convoluted and it's really fascinating. So, therefore, a woman will be attracted in general to an older man, right?
Right.
If she's looking for somebody to have babies with, it's kind of interesting because, you know, the women I've known who are attracted to younger men, they're not interested in having children.
Well, yes. In fact, there's another part of this that I was going to discuss if we have the
time.
Go ahead.
We've got about 5 more minutes.
Okay, well, this is actually a turn of events that has only come about during the past few thousand years, ever since there's been a switch from matriarchal to patriarchal society. Because in the matriarchal society and the matrilineal societies and in the societies where the goddess was the divinity and where women had more control and owned properties, etc., children were raised by the community, by the tribe. Children, in other words, the woman who was impregnated didn't have to worry about who's going to take care of my child because the tribe was going to feed all children to the point where sometimes in a tribe a woman will forget who her child is, I've read, because all the children belong to everyone. But when there was a shift and it became a patriarchal society where then we have a male divinity and we have a male-dominated, controlled structure, now the woman depends on the male because you no longer have the communal raising of children by all the women of all the tribe. And what you have now is the woman depends on the mate for support, no longer on the tribe. Now you have women who are attracted to older men because they need the mate who's going to support them. When you have a woman who's not interested in children or who knows that her children are going to be fed and taken care of regardless, she's going to be attracted to the younger male, of course, because that's more fun. You see?
So we're back to the woman in the suburbs who is hiring with the newsroom,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Because, sure, you could play with the boys.
As long as there's no reproduction involved.
Everything is taken care of.
As long as there's no reproduction involved, you don't need the mate to take care of you and the baby. But once you start talking about impregnation and childbirth and having children and family to raise, now you have women who want the older male because, and the cuddle theory explains why her orgasm takes so long to come versus his, because she wants him to cuddle to make sure that he's going to be a good mate. And a young teenager male is not going to cuddle.
What do you mean cuddle? She wants him.
She wants him to show that he has the patience and he wants to cuddle. He wants to give her that sense of
And really
caring.
What it is with a lot of older men, once they have an orgasm, they want to go to sleep.
But
even that is being there.
Yes, being there, not running off and wanting to mate with another woman in the next hour. You see, the older male is more likely to hold her, to spend time with her, to show her that he cares enough by taking longer to have sex with her. A younger male is going to be just, you know, the quick thing, and then he's going to be off and running. So it makes sense that the woman who thinks of conceiving is looking for an older male. But this wasn't always true. It's been true in the patriarchal, let's say the last maybe 3,000 years or so.
It certainly is fascinating, Roberta. You know, we could go on for a very long period of time. And it's the kind of thing that Roberta and I will continue to work with you, my friends. We're going to bring this all back to you and talk about this even more.
Oh, there's a lot more that we can talk about on the subject of sexuality.
Right?
Yes, but what and, we but need about now the,
I think
is
what we've
support.
Just said about woman's orgasm is a very, very important piece. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Hey, 212-757-4488. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. You are listening to some of the most exciting programming that I've ever done before. And this is, I love it. This is these 10 programs, The History of Human Sexuality with Roberta Maria Atti and me. 212-757-4488. The most exciting part of this is we put it on flash drives. A flash drive is a vehicle, a way that you can get this on this little tiny thing. You can carry it with you. You could go to any friend's computer, plug it into their computer. They could download it from your flash drive. Right, you could give it to them. It's a wonderful thing. It's an education. It's good for any institution. Buy this and donate it to a library. Donate it somewhere. 212-757-4488. It is a $200. We're asking for a $200 premium. $200, a lot of money. But we're asking for that because of the amount of work that we're putting into this, and we believe it's that valuable. 10 programs on the history of human sexuality, where it came from, the evolutionary conundrum, the need for orgasm, mating, the need for nurturance, fertility, conception, the need, why communication, love and attraction, and so much more. Followed, including with that, an interview with Elizabeth Eves that we did called Bear, which is really fabulous, and Bonk, which is another one done with Mary Roach about the science of sexuality. 212-757-4488. For a $200 donation, you could get this flash drive, and I hope you get it. Because it's just beautiful, and it's a little black thing that you carry with you. It's reusable. You could take it. You could download the stuff. WBAI, it says 99.5 FM. You could carry this on your keychain, and you could plug it in wherever you want. You know, meet somebody for the first time, you could say, let me plug in my flash drive. That may be a whole new way of meeting people. 212-757-4488. If you do, you could download the material from this, and included in that material, I'm going to send you some of my special music, and you know me in music. I'll send you a whole group of things that you probably would not pay attention to normally. 212-757-4488. Similarly, for $200, similarly, I don't know which one is better anymore. You can either listen to these CDs or you can get a consultation with me. What does a consultation mean? It means sit and talk with me for a period of time, a short period of time. Send me an email. Tell me what you want to talk about. We get together. We talk face to face. I meet you. I've met so many people this week, this past week, people who have been listening to me for years. One person said every day for 12 years. Another person is an investment broker. Another guy trades currencies. I listen to you. I put the program on and I listen. It's really fabulous. And then they get to finally walk in and meet me face to face. And we talk. And it's just a beautiful experience. I love meeting you. You love meeting me. A good experience, and maybe you walk away a little richer than when you came in because you'll learn something about yourself, which I will share with you if I see it. 212-757-4488. You can call for one of two things. You can call for the flash drive, the Positive Mind Sex Flash Drive, or you could call for the consultation with me, but of course you could call for both. 212-757-4488. We're at the tail end of our fun drive. This is it. This is as far as we go. We're going to be with you till 3 o'clock today, but we're asking you to please make your final donation, 212-757-4488. Go to your phones right now, 212-757-4488. We're putting together we have a beautiful group of people that we work with. The consultation is a wonderful thing. It's definitely worth twice the money, which we would usually charge for it. And it's a good thing. So we give that to WBAI, and I give those hours to WBAI as I've given them about 40 hours or 50 hours just the past few weeks. 212-757-4488, if you would. Remember, for $200, you get the unique flash drive, which I'm going to give you a money-back guarantee on it. If you don't like it, I'll somehow get you your money back because it's beautiful. It is just beautiful. Call credit cards, Visa, MasterCard, American Express. We have people standing by right now, 212-757-4488. It's a beautiful thing to do, my friends.
Hi, my name is Lisa Van Gundy, and I am a volunteer. I would like to encourage you to donate to WBAI. The Positive Mind is your university of the human spirit. Call 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Every cent makes a difference. If you can give $10 or $1,000, you can become part of this important team. 212-757-4488. Again, 212-757-4488. For a $200 donation, you get a meeting with Armand, plus a choice of book from our library, plus a bonus music CD. Any donation is acceptable. Please call 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Courage is the essence of WBAI. This is Lisa Van Gundy.
So, based on what we've been studying and researching and working on, I go back now to the impasse, to the bottleneck. The bottleneck is that about 140,000 years ago, we find remains in Africa by Lake Victoria of lots of young women, young hominid women dying in childbirth. And the reason for the death is that the head of their fetuses was too big to make it through the pelvis structure. At that time, women, young mothers, and their babies were dying in large numbers. And Dr. Schlein speculates that perhaps this threat of death in childbirth became the motivation, the spur that brought these women to a new awareness. And the new awareness is the connection between mating, being out on a romantic adventure, and 9 months later, having a baby, possibly dying from that event. So that was what we reviewed in the first of the series.
Bottom line of it became that the women suddenly, you know, where mating behavior simply is, if an animal is in estrus, it sends out a signal, usually through pheromones and through olfactory systems. The male picks it up. He says, I smell a perspective, and everything in him wakes up. He gets stimulated, not stimulated otherwise. He sees a female who is in estrus, and he says, I guess I'll go mate with that thing. And he does that. He jumps on, he mates, he walks away. Both of them take it as a casual kind of thing that happened. She's ready for it. He's ready for it. Certain times, estrus determines. Estrus being the time of the month when she's most likely to conceive.
But
that's most animals.
The thing is that most animals don't die in childbirth, or at least not nearly in they don't have nearly the high incidence of mortality caused by childbirth as humans do. So
this is humans when their heads started getting bigger because they needed bigger heads to be able to think in order to survive.
In humans, the prominent evolutionary gift, let's call it, has been intelligence. Because let's face it, we're not that strong, we're not that agile, we're not that fit compared to most higher species of mammals, and even birds. I mean, even other categories, not just mammals. So our advantage has been that we're so smart, we're so intelligent. We've invested a tremendous amount of evolutionary energy in being intelligent, more intelligent than other species. So the brain had to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and it got to a point where the head of this baby was so big that it would get stuck, and the female giving birth would die, and so would the baby. So females somehow arrived at the connection, making a connection between having sex, giving birth to a baby a certain amount of time, 9 moons later, and dying. Now, this requires an abstraction, meaning that the mind has to be able to make a leap into the future and has to be able to imagine something that has not yet happened. And this leap is a quantum leap in evolution.
Right, because as of this point, there is no abstract thinking.
Right, as there still isn't in animals, animals
so
like
now,
dogs and cats and monkeys and chimpanzees, the thinking happens, but it happens in the present. It is in this moment now, and everything related to that thought happens in the now and is present to the now. However, some of the higher species around are beginning. We're beginning to discover that they have some capacity for abstraction, but nowhere near the amount that humans have.
So humans, human females, figure it out. Hey, if I have sex when I'm too small, right, when my pelvis isn't developed full enough, because at age 10 I could have sex, or 11 I could have sex, some male comes along and decides to have sex with me as soon as I'm in estrus, I may not be able to carry it. So that's one problem. Second problem is, if I get pregnant, there may not be a male around to protect me. So the female, first thinking, probably the first hominid thinking of all times, besides where do I get a sandwich, is how do I stop this guy from jumping on my bones?
Mm. Right.
Now, so this is the very first thinking of mankind, humankind.
According to Dr. Schlein's theory.
And according to Robin
research.
Baker and a couple of other people as well. Okay. So the very first idea here is, how do I keep this happening? Well, what I'll do is I'll stop myself from sending out signals that I'm ready. Mm. I won't let the man know that I'm an estrus. So I'm going to cover myself up. I'm going to hide my signals. I'm going to change my smell. And you get the modern woman who is now capable of hiding her sexual preparedness, readiness.
But also that puts me in control of when I mate.
You as a woman.
Right, because in a female, in an animal situation, whenever the female is ready, she basically has no choice. Once the pheromones are out there, they're out there. And she doesn't have much of a choice unless she's able to outrun the male or to hide, or which is almost impossible. But in a female, the estrus is hidden. The male does not know that she's fertile. So she can be more in control of when she mates.
Now, if mating is the primary goal of all living beings, because it has to keep the species going, right? Is this what you usually say, Roberta? Species first.
Sure, that's absolutely true for every species. So, no, what I mean is the group first before the individual. The individual is meaningless. What's important is the whole group.
So if species is the purpose, if keeping the species going is the main reason we're here, and the female says, well, I'm going to be the one to determine how we keep the species going and when and where the mating takes place. Let us no longer question man's power on this earth. Because, I mean, really.
But that in theory, I mean, in Dr. Schlein's theory, that's precisely why that's the beginning of misogyny. That's the beginning of men's anger towards females, because females have the power to say no. And the wound, the psychological wound caused by a rejection of a female is supposedly, I don't know because I'm not a male, but supposedly one of the hardest things for a male to get over. It's very, very wounding. And so one of the ways, one of the strategies is, okay, let's control the female 100%. Let's be completely in control of her as if she were an object, so that she might have the power to reject us, but we have every other form of power over her life that we can imagine.
We're going to take a short break, play you a little music, and when we come back, we'll continue with our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
This is The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Normally heard Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. right here in the center of your dial, a two-hour special. And today I'm going to be presenting to you a remarkable presentation about sexuality, about the evolution of sexuality, about where it began. And this comes from the work that I did years ago with Roberta Maria Atti.
One of the strategies is, okay, let's control the female 100%. Let's be completely in control of her as if she were an object, so that she might have the power to reject us, but we have every other form of power over her life that we can imagine.
So if I don't want her to reject me, I will keep her where I want her to be, keep her totally dependent on me, keep her crippled, keep her down, make sure she has no other power.
Right.
And if we could do that,
then her power is meaningless.
Her power is relatively small.
And I think one of the things that Dr. Schlein says that really touched my heart, and I really would like to say this to all the mothers out there, if I may. He says one of the most important antidotes to offset misogyny in a boy, in a young man, and misogyny is very tempting because it's all over the place. You know, there's a great deal of misogyny in the culture that we live in. One of the ways is mother's love, meaning that if the boy, and by the way, let me just define misogyny. Misogyny means hatred of women. Hatred of women can be very overt, or it can also be subtle, and it can express itself in a way that it's not visible. It's hard to pinpoint how exactly this is manifesting, and yet it's pervasive, socially pervasive, and it's so strong that it keeps women down, even though outwardly we're all saying that women are liberated. But when we look at the reality of a woman's life, we find that many aspects of it are not liberated at all. I'm not going to get into that because that's not the topic. But one of the things that Leonard Schlein says is, well, to help boys grow up not hating women, one of the best things we can do is, as a mother, love them unconditionally. Because if a boy has in his pocket his absolute unconditional mother's love, so that he knows that for her he comes first, and that no matter what he does, she will never reject him, she will never judge him, she will never blame him, she will always love him unconditionally, that goes a long way to offset the damage caused by the rejection of a subsequent woman or a mate.
What said just then? Armand DeMille here with Roberta Atti. We're talking to you about human sexuality and how human sexuality shaped society. We're talking specifically today about mating and parenting, and that the role that that this all took as women suddenly had the power, the female had the power to say to the male, no, not now. And so she changes her body, she changes her scent, she doesn't let us know his readiness. Now, this leaves the male in a strange condition, because whereas in the past he would use hunger to know when he wanted to eat, you know, so a lion will not go out hunting if he's not hungry. They don't want to necessarily just hunt to kill. They're not killers, they're just eaters, they're food people, right? So now he wants to know, you know, every now and then a female would come by and she'd be whiffy.
That's well put.
You like that word, whiffy?
Whiffy.
He comes a whiffy female, a whiffy woman. Mm-hmm. Or male would be whiffy because mm-hmm. it means he's ready. No, but she would be whiffy and she's whiffy and he kind of...
Well, she's whiffy in a certain way and then he becomes whiffy
in his
way. Yes.
Then suddenly he wakes up and he says, oh, I know that smell. This means love.
Right.
So he goes over and he mounts and he has sex and that's the end of that, right? And then he goes back to sleep until he gets hungry and he can either eat or have sex, whichever one, or sleep, whatever he's in the mood for. Nothing special. But now take away the whiff. Now he's got no whiff.
Or he has it all the time.
Or he has a whiff everywhere.
Right.
And he's confused.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't know which way to go. How am I going to, when am I going to be ready? When am I not going to be ready? And the man, therefore, has to be ready to respond anytime to anyone. That's the adjustment of the male being.
That's what happened as a result of this situation, where the female hid her estrus. So the male had to be ready all the time because there was no longer a set time, as you just pointed out.
So he couldn't even go to sleep. I mean, he's got to be ready when he sleeps.
Yes.
If the moment happens while he's sleeping and suddenly she wakes him up and says, honey, now,
yeah.
Boom, he's got to be responsive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So male is always responsive all the time, supposed to be, ideally. Plus, we add to that that the demands on the male was more testosterone. That we're going to drive, we got to make him stronger. We got to make him chase animals. We got to make him be a better hunter because he's got to bring back food for us in order to take care of us the women.
Us the women and the babies.
And the babies. So now a male has, he's ready for sex all the time with more testosterone.
Right.
So he's a potent being.
Right.
And this is the condition of human males, and human females. She's saying, I'm going to hold it back. I'm not going to let you know when I want it. And he's saying, I'm going to be ready whenever you say.
Hmm. And this is conducive to higher and higher levels of testosterone because for both mating and hunting, that's the hormone that would maintain that condition of readiness, both in bed as well as on the hunt.
Now, don't you think this stuff is fascinating? I mean, if you think about it, if the basic thing about men is they are always ready all the time. Does that mean always ready all the time, Roberta, means that men are basically, on a primitive level, sexual addicts?
No, I don't see it that way. Although I think it's possible that in our culture, someone would answer yes to the question you just asked. I think we confuse behavior that has developed as a response in response to evolutionary needs. We confuse that with compulsive behavior dictated by an unmet need. And I think we need to spend a minute defining what the two are and what the differences are. In males of the human species, more so than in any other species that we know of, there has come about a type of sexuality that is very compelling because, as we just said, the human male has to be always ready in order to be there when the time is right, when she says it's right, because sexuality is basically under the female's control. So she says now, and that's when he has a chance. And if he misses that chance, that's it. He may miss his chance of having an offspring, okay? So we have a brain that's wired that way. Then we have a society in which we see these males who tend to behave in ways that are compulsive around sex, meaning that they have to have an endless list of broken hearts behind them or about them, and that they cannot stop themselves from having one sexual exploit after another, and that they justify it in every possible way they can by saying that this is the way men are and I can't help myself and what's wrong with it, etc. And what we have now is a compulsive behavior where sex has become almost like a drug, meaning a way in which the man tries to get his needs met through sex, through that physical closeness, and through that establishment of power also, because sex has to do with power, with feeling the powerful self.
Well, you went back to the misogyny before, Roberta, as well.
Exactly.
It's the aggressive act. It's reducing the woman who has the power.
Right.
To her knees.
Yes. So
right?
That's sexual addiction. The fact that human males are so interested in sex does not make them sex addicts. Just makes them creatures that have developed in response to an evolutionary need that has created a nervous system and a brain that works that way for the specific needs of that species. But a sex addict, which could also be a female, of course, is someone who tries to get a certain need met through compulsive sex. And there's a big difference between the two. So to say that if a male is interested in sex all the time, he's a sex addict, I think it's jumping to a conclusion that may be unfair, looking at how his sexuality has evolved through the millions of years of human evolution.
So we have to, what we have to look at, therefore, is that there is, sex becomes two ways now. It becomes a way of acting out aggression. It also becomes a way of following a biological imperative, right, which is to mate as often as possible with as many females as possible. But it doesn't work. The culture looks at this and says, this is no good. What are we going to do? What the culture did, how are we going to keep men from having sex with women who are weaker than they are, if the women are going to want to be have children and be, you know, with one male? And so how do you develop this? How do you keep control over the male testosterone and the male drive to have sex with anything, anytime? And the way you do it is you develop law.
Yes, you develop law. Let's remember that the first people who want to control male sexuality the most are men. We are under the misguided impression that it's women who want to control male sexuality. But in reality, it's other men. Why? Because other men want to control their neighbor's sexuality to make sure that their offspring are theirs and not their neighbor's.
we're going to have to go into this whole idea of men.
But it's male that develop laws and system to regulate behavior in order to control their own sexuality, because without laws that are enforced by the group and by all the males of the group, their own individual sexuality is so powerful that they're not sure they could control it themselves in the ways that they think it should be controlled.
Round, like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever-spinning reel. Like a snowball down a mountain, or a carnival balloon, like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the moon, like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes of its face, and the world is like an apple whirling silently in space, like the circles that you find windmills of your mind, like a tunnel that you follow to a tunnel of its own, down a hollow to a cavern where the sun has never shone, like a door that keeps revolving in a half-forgotten dream, like the ripples from a pebble someone tosses in a stream, like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes of its face, and the world is like an apple running silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind. Keys that jingle in your pocket, words that jangle in your head. Why did summer go so quickly? Was it something that you said? Lovers walk along the shore, leave their footprints in the sand. Is the sound of distant drumming just the fingers of your hand? Pictures hanging in a hallway and the fragment of a song. I've remembered names and faces, but to whom do they belong? When you knew that it was over, you were suddenly aware that the autumn leaves were turning to the color of a hair. Round, like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever-spinning reel. As images unwind, like the circles that you find. In the windmills of your mind. in the windmills of your mind. In the windmills of your mind.
Hey, this is Julian, and we're bringing you clips from the 10-program series called The History of Sex with Roberta Atti and Armand, and it's just amazing stuff. I mean, hearing about nature's secrets, and it's really, really cool. And we're going to be putting all of this, the full programs that these clips are from, plus Bear, an interview with Elizabeth Eves, and Bonk, an interview with Mary Roach. Now, this stuff is kind of raunchy. It's a little interesting. We decided that we weren't going to put Bear on air because it's a different kind of show. It's a show that we want you to want to hear, and it's pretty incredible. It's the book actually that Elizabeth Eves wrote, which we're going to be talking about, is The Naked Truth About Stripping. It's called Bear, and she as a job, her day job or night job is that, and we're going to be talking about that. And there's going to be 10 programs about the history of human sexuality, where it all started, the evolutionary conundrum, the need for communication, the need for nurturance, mating and parenting, the need for orgasm. It's all really interesting stuff, and we're going to be putting this all onto a flash drive for you guys, which is, if you haven't heard yet, or if you're not too into computers and stuff, if you've got a computer, you can take this flash drive and put it into your USB port, and you can just listen to all these shows, and they're going to be all on. There's 12 programs. 10 programs about the history of human sexuality, one program called Bear, the interview with Elizabeth Eves about the naked truth about stripping, and Bonk, an interview with Mary Roach about science and sex. And then on there, too, will be some interesting stuff that Armand put on there.
You know what I'm going to put on here? I'm going to put on the interview with me and Esther Armand. I'm going to throw that on here as well. So Esther Armand and I got together recently, and we made a very interesting interview, which is not heard. Throw that in here as well as anything else I find that I think would be a fascination to you.
And that's really the cool part about these flash drives. We've got space on there, and we can put whatever we want. And this is the stuff we handpicked for you guys because we feel it's special. It's stuff that you don't get to hear often. This is stuff that instead of getting a big stack of CDs that you might screw up and lose somewhere, you've got this little flash drive, and you put it in your computer, and you've got it forever. And it's really amazing. It's this little black thing. We've got it right here in front of us. You can put on your keys. It's got WBAI and 99.5 FM right on there. And it's really sleek. And it's unobtrusive. It's smart. And it's modern. And it's cool. And we've got all this stuff on there for $200.
It's unobtrusive. It's smart. It's modern. And it's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa! How could you not get that?
All those things. And the number you're going to call is 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. And that's the number here at the office at the Mill Center. And we're going to be answering your calls and taking your donations, hopefully.
Show your support for the station now, my friends. 212-757-4488 and your support for The Positive Mind. Keep in mind what you do by keeping this program going. You're supporting the entire world of people who listen to these programs. And there's a big audience out there. There are people in every country. These flash drives are available around. We'll be able to send them around the nation because they're going to be cheap to mail. Right? It's just no bigger than a letter. 212-757-4488. These will be coming out to you right away. And you know I keep my promises. Those of you who bought the men's CDs already received them. We've mailed them out this week. We got them out the mail. So we keep our promises. All of the consultations that we've promised you, which is another available premium, those have been done. 212-757-4488. Well, some of them are booked out for the next couple of weeks, but.
And if you want one of those consultations, you can also call in for another $200 donation, and that would be to meet with Armand. And we've been offering that, and people have been taking those offers, and it's really amazing.
I've met with so many people at this point, and they've gotten exactly what they desired and what they wanted. 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488.
So we've got these two premiums today. That's what we're offering you. They're both $200 donations, and with that, you're going to get this gift of a flash drive with 12 programs on it. The History of Human Sexuality, those 10 programs about that. The interview with Elizabeth Eves, The Naked Truth About Stripping, and Bonk, the interview with Mary Roach about science and sex. And then maybe some music from Armand and a little interview with Esther Armand. So all this on that flash drive for $200, or you can call 212-757-4488 and get that consultation with Armand that everybody's been talking about.
212-757-4488. We only have a short while to be with you, my friends. 212-757-4488. But we do have music for you. That we have for sure. And this music, most of which will be included in what I send you on the flash drive. And we've got good wishes, too. 212-757-4488. Go to your phones right now, my friends. And thank you so much.
Yo soy Angela Rivas y deseo hacer una donación a WBAI para ayudar el programa The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. Este programa ayuda a personas alrededor del mundo. Yo sé que este programa se escucha en mi pueblo natal, en Moca, en la República Dominicana. Por favor, llame al 212-757-4488 y haga una donación. 212-757-4488. Demuestre su amor.
This is Alexander Rives. You're listening to The Positive Mind. Go to your phones and dial 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. If you make a $200 donation, you can choose either The Positive Mind Sex Flash Drive or a one-time meeting with Armand himself. 212-757-4488, 212-757-4488.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Atti, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We are talking about meeting behaviors, and we're back with you now. Now, let's talk about this, Roberta. So then these laws are formed. And what are the laws formed? You got to figure out some way. Because, I guess you talked about parenting, right? You said, so somehow the male notices.
No, what I said was that the mating behavior, the sexual behavior of males of the human species need to be contained, but those who are doing the containing the most are other males. We are under the assumption that it's the females who want to, you know, put a lid on male sexuality. Because it gets in the way or something. And that may be the case, but nothing compared to how other males want to control their brother's sexual and mating behavior in order to prevent, confusion as far as paternity goes. So the laws and the structures, the social structures designed to control human behavior ultimately all revolve around who owns whose children.
Now, this very interesting concept, we want you to keep in mind, this is 140,000 years ago. First, the woman says no, right? Then they figured this thing out. When did the first cave drawings appear?
Okay, well, what ends up happening about 40,000 years ago, let's say there's about 100,000 years of evolution of hominids, Homo sapiens evolves through that time when females took control of mating behavior by saying no. There's about 100,000 years after that where things continue to move along, and the woman has more and more established power and control over when she mates with whom, and things kind of go along, you know, smoothly and easily. Then all of a sudden you have an explosion of artistic expression in humans, as shown in these artworks found in caves and other places, other human dwellings, where you have an explosion of these paintings that draw scenes of hunt and scenes of death and scenes of birth and scenes of mating and lovemaking, and all kinds of human life becomes inspiration for these early artists. And so here we have an example of such an event whereby all of a sudden humans started expressing the issues that they were preoccupied with regarding life and death in all of it, all of their aspects. And they were so preoccupied and they were so enthralled with the whole idea of life and death that they started painting things in their home, in the caves that they was living in. They were living in. This happens about 40,000 years ago. And the question is, why? Why 40,000 years ago?
Why all of a sudden are we suddenly have this other form? Because what this other form is another form of abstract thinking. Think about this. First, abstract thinking, how am I going to keep the man from jumping on my bones? Second, abstract thinking, well, how am I going to get enough things to make her want me to jump on her bones? Right? Third, abstract thinking, I'm going to make drawings. Mm. I mean, I'm sure some took place in between then.
Sure, but there was an explosion.
It kind of meant that somewhere on these cave drawings, there appeared a concept of death.
Yes, that was not there before.
And we think about most animals, you know, they say, oh, animals accept death as a transition. You know, animals don't know what death is.
No. They're not preoccupied with it. They may know what it is when they see it, but they are not preoccupied with
it. You sniff a dead animal, you sniff your fellow wolf, mm-hmm. who you've been mated to monogamously, and you go, oh, no more of that life stuff coming out.
But they may even have feelings, like the person who wrote that book, When Elephants Weep, mm-hmm. right? Animals may very well have feelings of sadness and grief, may experience death as a life-changing event, death of a companion, for instance, but they're not preoccupied with it. And the interesting thing, the reason why we bring this into our discussion today is because sex and death, as Freud would have said, would have agreed with us on, go together, meaning that sexual behavior and the awareness of death and the awareness of parenting, especially on the part of males, comes with the awareness of death.
All right.
There's a big link there that we need to talk about.
We're going to have to talk about your big link.
Armand.
Here it is, WBAI. Sex and death go together. Mm. It's like a date. You know, you have a party. Everybody come dressed as your favorite thing. I'll come dressed as sex. I'll come dressed as death. Those two most likely to come. The French call this le petit mort, the orgasm, right?
Yep, yep.
Sex and death, the little death. Yep. How do sex and death go together? That's one of the questions we have here at WBAI 99.5 FM. And if you've just tuned in, you want to learn more about this. This is Roberta Atti and Armand DeMille. Here we go. Sex and death. Hmm. No connection so far. Nobody else thought of this. No elephants thinking about sex and death. No monkeys thinking about sex and death. Hominids, Homo sapiens, Homo sapiens suddenly say, I think there's a relationship.
Well, along with the capacity to think in the future comes the awareness that if death comes for everyone, it shall also come for me. This comes as a direct result of abstract thinking, of being able to predict the future. One of the ways in which hominids became able to predict the future, for instance, is through menses that come with moon cycles, right? They come and go when the moon waxes or wanes. I never remember those words, Armand, but with the phases of the moon, you can predict a woman's menstruation, the onset of the menstruation, or you can kind of predict when ovulation is going to be. And then the other interesting aspect of this is that in a tribe, in a group of humans, females will go into this synchronistic menstruation pattern whereby their menses will all happen at the same time, and that facilitates impregnation. When you look at the dynamics of it, if all the females are fertile at the same time, that facilitates and makes it easier for them to get impregnated and for the rhythm to pick up in a certain way that makes, again, survival of the group easier and more successful.
Humans and animals are very similar. very similar, so much so that if you were to turn on Spring Break on TV and watch a teenage or a young college spring break, you'll see almost everything. It follows almost all the rules of animal mating behavior.
And that is because the chemistry behind it is the same. The chemicals are the same for animals as they are for humans. The hormones are the same. And brains are similar, especially in mammals and especially for the primates. Primates are very similar to humans, and yet there is a big difference.
Which we're going to talk about.
Which we're going to talk about.
The similarity in watching the program, you're going to see hormones, you're going to see a lot of testosterone running around the place and a lot of other chemicals. You're going to see the men competing with each other, young men, when hormones are truly raging, right? And you're going to see them competing and playing volleyball and seeing who's going to be the strongest. And then you're going to see the young women positioning themselves to attract the stronger male, the more desirable male. It's kind of obvious. It's kind of clear. But that's not enough of a story. Humans are not just animals. Even those humans have capacities that are different than all other animals before us. Humans have developed a convoluted, interesting word, a convoluted brain. We have a complex brain. What's important about this is that the complexity of our mind enables us to develop a thing that we're going to find is what truly separates us. But let's go back for a minute to the evolution of human sexuality, and let's consider that it is the easiest thing to manipulate people, which is to control their sexuality. And by manipulate, I mean manipulate not just in a negative way. If you're a society, and you want to build your society, and you want to get more people, what do you want to do? You want to put rules on that tell people, don't have random sex, right? This is one of the things. Don't have sex with your family, because that's going to weaken the species. Don't have sex with people who are too young. Don't have sex if it's going to wind up getting the family to come after you with a gun and shoot you, right? Don't have sex with your partner's wife. Don't have sex with, you know, the guy who lives next door's wife. Don't have a lot of sexual inhibitions. In fact, weren't you saying something about all rules?
Well, what I was saying was that because sexuality has been so central and such a powerful drive in human behavior, meaning that humans will often do things for in the name of mating that they will not do for any other reason. Sexuality is such a powerful instinctual, hormonal, physiological urge, and humans are so sexual. Humans are so compelled in their sexuality. It is so important in human beings that laws and regulations of society have emerged as a way to control precisely the sexual behavior, especially of adult males. Young adult males can behave aggressively, can behave destructively, can behave in ways that are dangerous for the community. So a lot of the constrictions of society, the rules that have come up, the do's and don'ts, are really there in order to protect the community from the sexuality of young men.
So the rule is species first. The rule is how are we going to get by? And let's develop rules around that. That's how this whole thing started 140,000 years ago. We made rules about sex for the first time.
Well, women started because they were the ones dying. And what we said was that most likely it seems that women figured out the connection between mating, between sex, and having babies. And from there, we have come down history and we have explained the consequences of that realization and how it has affected, for instance, relationship between genders. Women took control in a sense of mating, in the sense that women had to protect themselves from mating in a way that could have killed them. and from mating too much, from mating and having too many babies, from mating when they're too young. So women took control, and that has set off a set of dynamics that have affected the genders, but then have affected all society.
And, it, you know, Roberta, it did one other thing. It was the very first complex thought. Do you know what I mean? In other words, this was not just set off rules about sex and society. It set off this idea that you could think, that you could project, that you could imagine.
It set off the idea that actions, events could have a consequence in the future, so that the mind of the human became able to connect something that could happen or was about to happen in the present with something that could happen down the road. And that's something that animals cannot do.
Well, we're going to talk about animals now. I've got to go back to that for a minute, because many of you have your dog and your cat, and you say, my cat loves me, and my cat knows that I'm out, and my cat and I have a relationship, and my dog and I have a relationship. Let's talk about the animals and their perceptual ability, okay? If you watch an animal in two places, being killed or having sex, you will find this kind of very unusual, surprising lack of understanding. Animals do not understand death. Animals do not understand sex as it relates to pregnancy.
Because animals do not understand that things happen in time. Animals only live in the present. The present is like a bubble that contains everything that there is. For an animal, there is nothing outside of that moment of perception. For an animal, there is nothing to worry about in the future or the past, because future and past don't exist. See, the brain of an animal is not able to accommodate the thought of the future or the past.
This is very important. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. In case you want to stop for a minute and just think about that. Who would ever think that human sexuality could be that complex? But it has its evolution. It's got its chemistry. It's got its... There is so much to it. And that's why it seems like there are so many problems around sexuality and relationships. That's why you have to understand this stuff, my friends. Maybe you can't listen to all of it because we can only play a small part for you. But I guarantee you, this is more fun than watching television. You could take this with you, and you could make it in such a way that you could hear it wherever you're going. 212-757-4488. The work with Roberta Atti is precious. We did the men's series together. We're doing this History of Human Sexuality series on this flash drive. Now, if you don't think you could use a flash drive, you can. If you have a computer, you can use a flash drive. You plug this in. It's not like you plug it in and you have to be on the internet. You plug it in and all the information, it's like an external drive. It's right there, right in front of you. And we're going to juice it up. Telephone number, 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Go to your phones right now, my friends, for a $200 donation. Yes, it's $200, but we're putting a lot of work into this. We're reaching into the vault. 212-757-4488. You will get entertainment that I promise you is very rewarding. 212-757-4488. In addition to the 10 programs on the history of human sexuality, which is going to be called the Positive Mind Sex Flash Drive, we're going to include two other interviews that I did. One is an interview that I did with Elizabeth Eves called Bear. Elizabeth is a stripper. And she was a stripper who wrote a book called Bear, and she talked about how men were attracted to her and what they would do and what they would do when they would go to clubs. She called it the naked truth about stripping. 212-757-4488. Limited number of these drives available, by the way, but for the first, I think, 35 people who call, you'll get them. $200 donation, 212-757-4488. In addition to that one, we're also going to present Bonk with Mary Roach, which is about the science of sex. And she talks about the physical science of sex and how science and sex match together. So you've got a total of 12 programs. Bear is remarkable. Bonk is fascinating. And the 10 programs, 212-757-4488. The flash drive includes that plus music. Yes, music. I will throw onto this flash drive another section which will include music. You will see and hear about music. This is Armand DeMille with you. You'll see some of my favorite music. I'll throw it on there for you, stuff that you haven't heard before. 212-757-4488, 212-757-4488. So you get music, you get history, you get Roberta Atti, you get listening to some very interesting people talk about sex, and you get me. There should be a way. Let me ask you, Julian, is there a way to adapt a flash drive to a car? How do you do it? What do? You just put it on a computer? What do?
In a car, I guess, yeah. Well, there's a lot of cars in the last couple years that have USBs that you can actually plug the flash drive into. You can also do it on your TV if you have a smart TV, which is something that came out about 3 or 4 years ago, which a lot of people have now. HD TVs basically have a USB port. You put the flash drive in there, and then all the programs that we put on this flash drive will actually show up on your TV. You could just click them with your remote, and they'll actually play right through your TV speakers, too.
Wow. But what about in the car itself? Let's say you're doing a trip.
In a car? I mean, it's possible.
Bring a laptop.
You can bring a laptop.
And plug your laptop plug it right in. You hear it right on the speakers.
You can put it on your computer and sync it with your iPhone, or you can burn a CD of what's on there. You know, it's totally possible. They're flexible. That's what's cool about these flash drives. You get these files. They're on your computer, and you can do whatever you want with them.
Oh, so if you wanted to, you could download them to a CD.
You could put them on a CD
and take them with you.
You could send them to somebody else by email. You could upload them on the internet to use in a video that you're making. Really, anything. They're yours now. You know, once you've got this flash drive, and then you can reuse the flash drive too. Once you've downloaded the programs off it, this is something you can. You can put your photos on and give it to somebody else.
And it says WBAI.
And it says WBAI. They can tune in and hear some good stuff.
212-757-4488. Go to your phones right now, my friends. $200 donation gets you the Positive Mind Sex Flash Drive. We were trying to find a title for it, so we thought Sex Flash Drive were three interesting words to put together. And included in that, of course, 10 programs about human sexuality, plus including in that the interview with Elizabeth Eves, the other one with Mary Roche, plus music from my vault, from the vault of music of Armand DeMille, which you know about that stuff. 212-757-4488 for a different $200, my friends. You can have a meeting with me, Armand DeMille, personally. I'll meet with you. We'll talk about anything that comes up. Usually it knocks your socks off because I've got some... I don't know where it comes from, but I got a way of seeing things that most people don't have. Maybe it's just experience. Maybe it's instinct. Maybe it's street smarts. Call it whatever you want. 212-757-4488. Come and sit with me. Whatever it is, it will not offend you. 212-757-4488. A $200 donation gets you the one-time consultation with me. Or for a different $200 consultation, you can get the flash drive. I recommend both. 212-757-4488.
And you know what's cool about this flash drive is if you think you feel like you won't be able to use it or computers are too complicated, it's really not. You plug it right into your computer. If you have a computer, you can use this flash drive. You plug it into your USB port, which every computer has, and it'll show up right in your computer. The window will show up, and you'll have the 10 programs about the history of sexuality right there in front of you. Bear, the interview with Elizabeth Eves, and then Bonk, the interview with Mary Roach. And that music, you can drag it right into your iTunes or onto your desktop. And it's simple. It's two steps. Plug it in, and it's there. And you can listen to it. You just double-click it. And it's easy. It's not some complicated thing.
And the kind of music we bring you. Well, here's a good example of it right now, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you. Take a listen.
Two one two seven five seven four four eight eight.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti, back with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Thomas More wrote a book called The Soul of Sex. And he says, in order to discover the sublime joys of sex, we may have to develop a special kind of intelligence about the erotic life. As a therapist, he says, I found that one word characterizes most people's attitude towards their own sexuality. One word, confusion. They don't understand their attractions and desires. They feel generally that their sexual lives are and have always been a mess. They believe that they are blind and powerless in the face of passion. They sustain the hope that one day they will find sexual bliss, but so far that hope has not been realized. The only other thing that seems to confuse people as much as sexuality is love. Yep. There's another one that everybody kind of gets confused about. I read to you from Noel Coward. I am no good at love. My heart should be wise and free. I kill the unfortunate golden goose wherever it may be, with over-articulate tenderness and too much intensity. I am no good at love. I batter it out of shape. Suspicion tears at my sleepless mind, and gibbering like an ape, I lay alone in the endless dark, knowing there is no escape. I am no good at love. When my easy heart I yield, wild words come tumbling from my mouth, which should have stayed concealed, and my jealousy turns into a bed of bliss, turns a bed of bliss into a battlefield. I am no good at love. I betray it with little sins, for I feel the misery of the end in the moment that it begins. And the bitterness of the last goodbye is the bitterness that always wins. That's how many people feel about love. That's how people are confused about love, about sexuality, and that's why we're doing these programs. We want to talk about falling in love and being attracted. Here are the questions. Is it possible that the features which draw us to dates and mates appear to reflect reproductive and parenting potential? Is that all that it's about? Is falling in love this magical event, or is it in fact a way of just selectively trying to find someone who is going to give us the best genes so that we could reproduce? Are we really slaves to this? There are two theories about it. One is that the basis of it all is going to be that we're going to just find a mate, and that all our biological programming is going to send us to the most efficient mate, the most attractive, the one who could give us the best home. Women are attracted to older men who are successful. Men are attracted to younger women who are prettier. I mean, this is the basis of it. Is that all there is to it?
The first thing that happens when we see someone, we think that we respond by thinking something, but actually we don't. The first thing that happens between two people when they look at one another is actually something that happens below the consciousness level, and it happens automatically without them even knowing that it's happening.
And you know, Jeffrey Cowley, a scientist, he says that regardless of whether it's fair or unfair, logical or illogical, we find certain things more attractive than others. Then an MIT neuroscientist, Nancy Etcoff, said that the obsession with beauty has existed in every culture at every point in history, but like it or not, other members of the animal world appear to make rapid, unconscious visual assessments of other animals as well. So this attractive and what attracts us doesn't necessarily have to be beauty. Here's the fascinating thing about the babies, huh, Roberta?
Yeah.
It's shocking.
That really
it's surprising.
Is. Yes.
Babies ranging from 3 to 6 months old would have pictures put in front of them of faces that adults had agreed with that were attractive down to the less attractive. The babies looked significantly longer at the photographs of the people that the adults judged as attractive.
So there is something in the face of a human being that, according to how the features are positioned, assembled, distributed, communicates not just to the intellect, but to the instinct. Because babies, of course, in terms of intellect, a baby is not making any intellectual judgment or assessment when he or she looks at a face, right? It's just babies just looking.
They're not prejudiced. They haven't been taught.
Right.
You know, you got to go.
There's no prejudice. Exactly. So there are no limitations. There's no, and yet, so that says that what we consider attractive is not just a cultural thing, but it's a biological thing.
Based on evolutionary theory, then it should not be surprising that men find visual cues to attractiveness more relevant in selecting a mate than women do. The clearest feminine cue to men, and this is not to say that men are just stupid because this is what they're, this is a tendency. The tendency is to look for curving contours created by the contrast, get this, between the waist and the hips. Now, this is such an interesting thing because what they did in the studies of attractiveness, it wasn't just the size of the waist, the size of the hips, the size of the bust. It wasn't that. It was the contrast
right.
between the waist and the hips.
And what's interesting is that fashion for women throughout history, if you look at the evolution of fashion, has always done whatever it can to put that in even more in evidence with the skirts, with the big bottoms, and with the waist to make the breasts bigger and higher so that the waist is more visible
and
as contrast. And the corsets, right.
Which they would pull on until you couldn't breathe. We're going to have to be going right now, my friend. 212-757-4488. And since it's the last time we're offering, and so many of you have taken advantage of it, for an equal amount of money, $200, so now you can either get sex or me. Now, you can get me, you can get the history of sex, and you could listen to those beautiful flash drives and keep it, and then you could send it on to other people. What a wonderful little gift it is. 212-757-4488. But what I do have available to you is if you want to, you could have a one-time meeting with me personally. And I've done so many people. I've met so many people over the last 3 weeks because I've had spare time. 212-757-4488. You make a donation to WBAI and I will meet with you personally. I'll sit down with you in my office and we'll have a discussion about anything you want to talk about. It would be my honor and my pleasure. 212-757-4488. There are two premiums that we are offering. These are the two. The Flash Drive, the Positive Mind Sex Flash Drive, which includes the history of human sexuality, 10 CDs with Roberta Atti and Armand DeMille, including Bear, which will be another program, and Bonk with Mary Roach. 212-757-4488. You can go to my phones right now, my friends. 212-757-4488.
I want to know. Vorrei sapere.
I want to know.
Vorrei sapere.
I want to know.
Come fa la gente a concepire di poter vivere nelle case d'oggi in scatolati come le acciughe. Nascono i bimbi che han già le rughe.
Hi, I'm Audrey Clark, and I'm from Guyana. I've been working with Armand DeMille for over 2 years. Support the station. They bring you news and information from around the world that you can't get anywhere else. You can donate any amount by calling 212-757-4488. Show your support for the Positive Mind, WBAI, by calling 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488 to make a contribution.
I want to know. I want to know.
I want to know. I want to know.
That I fight forever.
the veil of the fire. So whatever they have to lift that if for whatever don't they ever. Don't they ever fight if up they ever don't fire. Tough for them, tough for them, don't forever. Tough for them, tough for them, tough for them, don't forever.
This is Alexander Rivas. You're listening to The Positive Mind. Go to your phones and dial 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. If you make a $200 donation, you can choose either The Positive Mind Sex Flash Drive or a one-time meeting with Armand himself. 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488.
Dove la carie germoglia già.